Hello, and welcome to the Untitled Female Driven Podcast. We are three film and TV writers who are here to talk about how to make it as professional writers in the entertainment industry. We created this podcast to cover what we wish we'd known when we were getting started so that you all can learn the easy way what we learned the hard way. And I'm Erica Schreiber. I mostly write features.
And I'm Hannah Rosner. I mostly write for television.
And I'm Jess Cho. And I'm not here today. And now I talk like this.
Just kidding. Jess isn't here today. And Jess will love this voice that we just did for her.
I think she's going to be like, wow, what an uncanny imitation.
Yeah, exactly.
I've waited my whole life for this. But more importantly, we have a really special guest with us here today.
We sure do. Very special. Today, we have my best friend who I've known for about 12 years in Los Angeles, Julia Turner. She is a director, current series at Warner Brothers Television. And so she's on the executive side, guys. So we're all TV writers and feature writers, and we want to know all about this other world that is pretty much a mystery to us. And so that's why we've asked Julia here today to talk about what it's like to be an executive. So hello, Julia.
Hi, guys. Julia here. Standing in for Jess Cho. It's great to be here.
Is Jess here? I thought Jess, we had a guest.
This is Jess for now. Jess for today.
Jess is now Australian. Yes. I love it.
Yes.
Julia and I have, we've been through a lot of adventures together, and we were both interns when we met. And so we met, I was working on a movie called Going the Distance. I was the post PA, and Julia was an intern, right? You were an intern with Joey at Montecito?
The good old days of internship. And I'd actually been told about Hannah by Joey repeatedly, like almost to the point of like, okay, I get it. Your roommate's cool. Like, we'll meet one day. Cool. And I think by the time we finally met, it was like months had gone by.
So a lot of reputation had been built up about the two of us from our mutual good friend, Joey. Shout out, Joey. We love you.
Shout out, Joey Morales.
So Hannah, Joey was your roommate, and he talked you up to Julia until you,
yeah,
you met.
Pretty much. And then it was magic from then on. It was meant to be.
I feel like you guys are just going to like get along, like real, like I think you're going to be best friends. And I'm like, that's very presumptuous of you, but okay.
He was absolutely right.
Joey had foresight.
He sure did.
So yeah, Julia and I, we go way back. We just continued to be friends as we sort of rose up in our careers. And truly to this day, like if one of us gets a promotion or, you know, gets a script set up or gets a show set up, we go to Smokehouse, we get a martini, and we celebrate. Like, we always celebrate each other's accomplishments, and it's been really cool to sort of be rising up in the creative space while Julia has been also rising up in the creative space, but on the, you know, development and production side of things, and she's just been absolutely crushing it. So now, Jules, you've been at WBTV, what, 3 years now? Or you were at Warner Horizon before?
I started at Warner Brothers in 2015, and I started as an assistant in the drama development department, working for a VP and a director of development, Matt King and Jen Vasquez. And getting to Warner Brothers was like, how do I get here? What, like, it was everything. That's like everything I'd been working towards. Couldn't have wanted it more. And like being there, it was really just like, oh, wow, this is how the sausage is made. At Warner's, it's very much like, how much can we do having like being the only independent, like one of the only independent studios around still, where the value really is like, let's work everywhere. It was just like the most amazing lesson in like any kind of show you can think of. And really when I first started, one of my bosses at the time was like, think of this as your grad school. And for the next 2 years, you're going to learn everything you need to know about what television is and like the sausage making process, yeah, so to speak. And then working for Matt King and Jen Vasquez. And then I ended up working for Susan Rovner, who was our head of creative affairs for both comedy, drama, and then also the basic cable streaming space. So being on her desk was really like the eagle eye view of every single show that went through Warner's, which was invaluable. And it was like just spoke to how much I loved the process, how much I was like, you know, you don't only have to do one thing. You can love a lot of things and use a lot of different muscles and be creatively fulfilled in many different ways. And then I was promoted off of her desk in 2018 to a manager of current series. And it's current is like the train is moving.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's going real, really, really fast. And just hold on. And if you fall off, then, you know, good luck.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I feel like that shows a really clear path to where you kind of started to where you are now. I always like to ask our guests how you got your very first entertainment industry job and how did that come about?
First foot in the door job was, well, in backing up a little bit, my dad was a literary agent. And he started William Morris, and then he started his own agency called the Peter Turner Agency. And when my parents got divorced, I spent a lot of time at the Peter Turner Agency. And I was a 12-year-old kid who was really bored.
Were you his first intern?
I think this is where I first interned because I was not paid and I got snacks. So yeah, that was an internship.
So we'll call it an internship rather than parenting.
Sure. And I answered phones and I was like, hold please. And I took down numbers and all the things. But there was one day in particular, I was like just bored out of my mind. And my dad had just stacks and stacks of scripts in his office. And one day, I think he was just so desperate to have me be quiet for 10 minutes so he could think. And he's like, why don't you just pick up one of these scripts and read it? And if you don't like it, then like, I will take you home. And I was like, okay, that sounds like a very fair bargain. And so the script he gave me was written by Stuart Kornfeld. I still remember the name of it because it's called I Smell the Future. I read it and I was like, oh, I kind of get what's happening. And I was like captivated. And as soon as I finished reading the script, I was like, wow, Dad, that was a really cool story. And he was like, yeah, let's call Stuart. You could tell him what you thought of it. So we called Stu and I was like, Stuart, you wrote such a fun story. Like, I thought it was going to be so boring, but it wasn't.
And sorry, you were like, you were 12 at this time?
Yeah.
I love this so much.
No filter. And I was like, it's a great story. It really should get made. And he's like, well, kid, you, until you're 18 years old, you have my permission to direct it. I was like, okay.
Wait, so, can I ask what was the target demographic of I Smell the Future? Like, was it for 12-year-old girls? Or
not 12-year-old girls. And I still have this script in my garage. It was really just like this moment of like, something's on the page. Someone put this on the page. Here's the person who did this getting what they're going for that kind of resonated very early on. And I was very keen on being like, Dad, I'm going to do what you do. And he's like, absolutely not. You will find something else to do. This business is insane. I don't want this for you. And I'm like, okay. Yeah, cool. Yeah, I'm still going to do something, but maybe not exactly what you do. So when I went to college, I studied international business and public relations, very non-TV and film because that was not going to fly. But I ended up at Loyola in Baltimore, of all places, which we like to say is be more or be less. But it was really like my whole thing was like, I'm coming back to LA because one, I don't do cold weather. And two, there's like job fairs on campus and all these like, go take a year off and like teach English in Thailand and like all these things that I was like, I just want to come back to LA. Like, that's the only place I want to be. My senior semester with a month left probably until graduation. And you're like, what the hell am I going to do with my life? I emailed this guy named Tom Pollock, who used to run Universal in like the 80s. And he was responsible for like Do the Right Thing and Field of Dreams, which my dad knew him through that. And I reached out to him at the urging of one of my dad's best friends of like, why don't you just email Tom and see what he'll say? So I emailed Tom and I'm like, yeah, I'm graduating. You don't know me. My sister interned for you one summer. And he wrote back and he was like, well, what can you do? And I was like, literally anything you ask me to do, I will do it. And it was just like, great, you can start on this date. And it was like a very insane moment because that's insane. And I walked into this internship, graduated in May, back to LA and walked in and I was like, okay, I'm here. And it was in the time, this is still a time where people don't get paid to be an intern. And it's really, that's like the paying your dues thing is like shitty because if you can't afford to like, what are you supposed to do if you're not getting paid? So that's like, I think one of the biggest hurdles that everyone's like, what am I supposed to do if I can't afford to not get paid for my services?
100%.
And I don't have an answer to it, but all I can say is like, that is shitty. That's a shitty barrier.
I'll tell you the answer. You live in a studio apartment with two other guys and you sleep in bunk beds.
Hannah, is your cot still available? Like, do you have it in your garage somewhere?
Hopefully it's in a dumpster somewhere.
I have been hearing more about places doing paid internships. I know Hillman Grad does one. I think some other companies are starting to to offer that just because of the pressure of change. So like, I know there's still, I imagine most of them are not, but just some kind of good news that some places are starting to recognize that they're losing talent to that.
Yes. And know your worth. You deserve to be paid for all the coffees that you're fetching and all the scripts that you're reading and all the coverage that you're doing. But I was very much like, I'm not leaving here till I get paid to be here. And I showed up every day, and 4 months later, the reception desk opened up. So I was like officially like hired, and I was getting like $500 a week. And I was like, that is enough to get a place to live on my own. I don't have to live on an air mattress with my family. This is it. So yeah, I was working at Montecito Picture Company. And eventually, after a couple of months of being a receptionist, I ended up working for Tom directly.
Cool. That's a great story of how to get that first break-in job, but also recognizing, you know, the difficulties and how some things have changed and how some things haven't. So that's awesome.
The takeaway is just getting yourself in a place where you'll figure it out, because this isn't rocket science. What can you do? It's like showing up on time and showing up every day, being eager and like being dependable, and just very achievable and attainable things once you get wherever the place is to start doing those things. A little bit of competence goes a very long way.
This is something I encourage people to do, even if they don't have this experience. Like, I always tell anyone who's applying for that first assistant job to put that they can roll calls on their resume, because I think I've said this before, literally a 12-year-old can do it. So like, there are certain aspects that are like, you can put it on your resume and you can learn it really fast.
The phone will be your best friend.
Befriend the phone, and the phone will be good to you.
Exactly. I would love to know more about your current job now that I know how you got there. Your director, current series, what does that entail?
This is the way that it like was broken down to me, and this is how it's made sense, where people are like, what's the difference between development and current, and like, is there a big difference? And so much of development feels like you're trying to build a ship that no one has ever seen sail before, and they're like, oh, look what this is, like, look at this cool piece, and look at this cool rudder, and look at like all these bells and whistles we could put on it, and like, no one's seen this before. And so they work really hard and furiously to build this boat, and no one has any idea if it is going to float or sink. They work tirelessly on it and get it to a place where like, this is the coolest boat, everyone's gonna love this boat. They throw it in the water, and everyone sort of does a, oh, here we go. And the boat either floats and it's glorious and it's amazing and it's above water, or the ship sinks very quickly. And the job of a current executive is let's say the boat is floating. Your job is to keep that boat afloat no matter what. So like, you're sailing into unknown territory. There's open waters, there's weather, there's mutiny. all kinds of things.
There's walking the plank.
Exactly.
There's streaming wars.
Uh-huh. So your job as a current executive is like, I'm doing everything in my power to keep the ship sailing. And it's very much like being a bridge, because you are in the middle. Specifically as a studio executive, you have a writer who is working with the producer. Your producer is coming to you, and you're a step in between the network. And I feel like so many people are like, why do you need a studio then? Like, why do we need a middleman? And really the goal is like, one, like, we'll pay for everything. But two, it's really trying to be a bridge of like communication and like helping both sides. When we get a studio draft and when we see things like a cut, like a studio cut, we're trying to get this in the best shape possible before it goes to the network, so that they're like, we see exactly what this is. Whatever their notes are really just continue to strengthen it. And not saying that it comes to us not already in network shape. If we have a showrunner and they're like, you know, my goal of this show is I'm going to make this show about the most blue chair you've ever seen. And that's what the show is. And so my job as a studio executive is to give notes to help it be the most blue chair, not to throw in red chair notes, because that doesn't help anyone. And so by the time it gets to the network, you're like, this is the Van Gogh period of blue chairs I've ever seen. We love it. It's like on straight to series.
Well, that's like a really thoughtful way to put that. That's also very fun.
Yeah, I'm loving these metaphors. Yeah. Yes. This is really helpful.
I have to say a particular shout out to you guys, because you did one episode that talks about show staffing and what writers need to know before like going into a meeting, and like what the purpose of that meeting is. And you guys have this metaphor of, it's like, it's like a road trip and your showrunner wants to know if you're in a van, if you can all be in this van together, who's wearing deodorant and who's not.
Shout out to Jess.
They're like very minimal bathroom breaks, but you want to know who you're going on a road trip with. So I'd always been explained to it as like, it's like putting together a basketball team, but not everyone knows sports ball. So the road trip analogy, I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. And I'm just going to tell you right now, I'm going to steal it, but I'll always credit
it's all
you
yours. And I'm going to steal your blue chair thing because that's phenomenal.
And in terms of, and I think you pretty much touched on a lot of what your job is. So like giving notes on cuts and giving notes on scripts and things like that. But I guess what else do you do?
So much of the job is like whatever your day-to-day of the show is. And it depends like where your show is. Obviously pre-production is one thing. And even backing up, whether you're getting your first season order and like, let's say it's a straight to series thing, current executives are assigned once you know it's going to be a series, right? And the typical handoff at Warner Brothers is around episode 4. And that's when development has to hand over their baby for someone else to raise. There's this sort of, I'm taking over the show, taking over the reins and continuing to keep the trains moving. If it's that, you know, first season straight to series order, so much of the show of like when you're getting your second season renewal or, you know, pickup is like, you know, staffing is obviously a huge thing. So much of staffing is so dependent on your showrunner and what they need from you and how you can help them. Sometimes they'll say, you know what, my whole staff's returning. We have options on everyone. All good. And you're like, great. I'm so happy to hear that. Everyone's fantastic. So glad they're all coming back.
200 fewer scripts for you to read.
2,000 fewer scripts to read. They sometimes have a need of like, look, I envision the season changing in this way. And I need a specific person to be able to contribute to the new direction of the show. And that may either be like because the location of the show is changing or it's telling a different kind of story or whatever the POV is. Sometimes you're looking to just fill one slot. Sometimes you have people like not coming back, you know, for whatever reason. And so sometimes you have many slots to fill. Sometimes you literally just have one slot to fill and sometimes none. Booking directors is a huge thing. If the show is a returning show, oftentimes they'll be like, you know what? Here's who was here last season. They killed it. We absolutely want them back. And when you're looking at director credits, if you see a director who's returned to a show, it's such a good sign. It's like such a like, oh, they fit in. They did great. They were prepared. They had great execution. So that's always like a great indicator that they did well. So sometimes your showrunner is like, I want to bring back, you know, these five people. And then I'm open to, you know, three new people, and then we're going to give one episode to a cast member. So it depends how you're like helping facilitate filling the slots. And then just another part is like making sure everyone is looped in. At the studio, is very specific in terms of like your department and your lane. So like my lane is creative and my lane is like working with the writers and booking directors. And like, I know that, but there's BA who's making all the deals.
And BA is, sorry, business affairs, correct?
Yes. Yeah. And then you have like legal, you have labor, you have research, you have post, you have like all of these different parts of the wheel. And you need to make sure, depending on what it is, everyone's looped in. And then you need to make sure the network is aware. And you need to make sure that your chairman is aware. So it's always like, is Channing aware? Channing's aware. Okay, good. Because nothing is worse than like a surprise. Like, why did we not know this character was being killed? Or why did we not know dot, dot, dot? That's when you've done a bad job. That's just like whatever the show needs are. And obviously, if it's like a multicam, you're going to those tapings. Those table reads are often in person. You have your run through. So that's a bit more time consuming on the daily. But then when your show's in production, like you're watching the dailies and you need to watch those because you learn so much and you can see like very early on, like whether it's your pilot or whether it's like you're coming back for season 4 or you have like a new guest, you know, a huge guest star, like just watching those like a hawk because you're also looking for wardrobe. You're looking for hair and makeup. Like I can't tell you how many frantic emails I've been on, like, what is going on with their hair?
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't know. You have to approve a lot of stuff before it goes to camera because by the time you're watching the daily, it's too late.
Yeah.
So if it's a performance note, you can massage it and you can work on that. But if it's like, I hate the outfit she's wearing and she keeps wearing bad outfits, then it's like, okay, we need to talk to wardrobe. This isn't like, the character just isn't believable, or like this is distracting or whatever.
How many shows do you cover, or do most execs, I guess, typically cover? And
it really depends. Again, like we have, I think we're like over 70 shows right now in, managed between like 12 executives. You can have a lot going at once, and it's challenging because obviously you need to watch all those dailies and all of the like cut, all of the material that comes in. Like, you know, you get a studio cut, but then you might get a revised studio cut and a second revised, and then it goes to the network. For any one show you're taking on, it's a lot of time. For me right now, I have 5 that are like up and running, and then I have others that are like, are we getting another season? This is in the pilot stage, waiting to hear like what's going to happen next. It's everything all the time, guys.
Do you pick which ones you get? Like what kinds of shows? I mean, and do you oversee or like to oversee?
It works differently in every place. Some places just cover like producer specific. So any show that John Wells is doing, it's like you cover all of John Wells. And then for us, it's a bit like, it's absolutely relationship based. It's also, it is really important that it revolves around your tastes, because it's so much of your job. And if you're just like, I don't get the show, or I don't connect with this, or this is not my cup of tea, then you're like doing a disservice to the show. How are you supposed to champion a blue show if you're like, you absolutely despise blue? If a show is coming down the pike and you're hearing about it, raise your hand, advocate for yourself. Like, I want to cover this, and this is why, because I know Hannah Rosner and I want to cover Hannah Rosner's show.
Damn right.
I worked with the Berlanti camp, so I want to work with the Berlanti camp again. Can I do that? So it really depends. And then there's shows where it's like, you know, it may not be inherently the thing that you were like jumping up and down to cover, but then you start to cover it and you put on the hat of whatever that show is, and you're like, okay, like through this lens, like I get what this show is and I get who this is for. You can be helpful in that way.
I wanted to steer it a little bit towards another part of your job, which I think could be helpful to hear about for our listeners, which is you take general meetings with writers, right? Like that's also a part of your job.
No, I don't take any generals anymore.
Not anymore?
I'm just kidding.
Yes. Oh my God. I was like wow, like, oh no. You must be so happy that you don't have to take generals anymore.
Take every general. If anyone reaches out to you, obviously like read it and like be open, like use your judgment, but like really generally the rule of thumb should be take every meeting, because you really don't know what's going to come of it. And like, there's so many times where you read a script that you're like, okay, I didn't love that. But then you meet them and you're like, well, you're amazing. And I loved meeting them because either the way they told their own story or a specific like experience that they have and point of view that they bring, you just literally never know. And it's just like, you know what? Meet them, see, hear what they have to say. And oftentimes it's just the energy that goes into it, right? If you're a writer going into a meeting and you're sort of like, hey, how's it going? It's like a little bit of it is like, okay, like you're the storyteller, like tell me a story. But it's not so much of like entertain me. It's literally just like, you just want to get a sense of that person. As a current executive, like if you're specifically staffing for a show versus like, is it just a general? It's really helpful to just get a sense of the writer or the director's taste. Because even if I'm not covering that show right now, or that isn't something I'm working on right now, like I may have that in 6 months and I will remember, oh wow, I just met with Erica. These are the things she loves. This actually would be, might be great. Like, and you put those things together. So like my goal every time I go into a general, and if it's like a great meeting, it's like, you want to keep those people and you want to figure out how to put good people onto your shows and keep them working, like in the Warner Brothers family. And like, I want to help give people the best email I can send is a director booking email, where it's like, you are booked. Here's how much you're getting per episode. Here are your dates. You feel like you're actually like, cool. I watched their stuff. I met them. They're a great fit for the show. We're booking them.
What makes a good general meeting from your perspective? Like what, you know, makes a writer really stand out or makes you think, you know what? I don't have anything for them now, but I will say I take generals sometimes and I'm like, that was a great meeting. And like, you know, I'll follow up with them in 6 months. But if our worlds just do not cross, I'm like, are they going to forget about me? What can help a writer stand out in your mind even years later when something comes across your desk that you're like, you know what? That person that I met 2 years ago, awesome meeting. they'd be great for this.
If there were ever in a band and the lead singer fell and broke his back, I think I would remember that.
The story is vaguely familiar. I think yeah. So you're just zooming out a little. Basically, tell a really memorable story.
You guys are the writers, and everyone has a story like somewhere in there. And I think what stands out the most, and this is hard because, like, for instance, we'll have like general meetings with like multiple people in our department, and there'll be like six or seven executives on a Zoom and one writer. I'm not a huge fan of Zoom. It's taken a long time to just get comfortable, you know, being on camera and figuring out how to like speak creatively. But I think like that is like a lot. And like, if it's one-on-one or if it's with seven people staring at you on a Zoom, really everyone is there because they genuinely want to be there. No one's twisting their arm to be there. And it should really just feel like a conversation and just want to hear the right, like just want to get to know you. Like I read your sample. It was awesome. Truly just, I just want to hear you talk, get to know you a little bit. There's a lot of small talk to start a meeting or whatever, but then I think it like leads to other things. And for a writer being able to tell their own story and their journey a little bit, and then also like, what do you want to do? Like, what do you actually want to work on? And oftentimes there's like, I have a general someone and they're just like, oh, I love this show that you're working on. I'm like, you don't have to do that. If it's really not a thing that you're a huge fan of, and it doesn't need to be the company that you're like, oh, I just love everything Warner Brothers is doing. Like, if that's really true, like, great, say that. But if it's, it helps if it's more specific and like more specific to what you gravitate to and why. I like this because, and this is an experience I had, and this is my skill, like this is what I really thrive at doing, or these are the specific stories I want to tell. That's actually more helpful than just pretending that you love Peacemaker, which I'm like, great, I don't cover it and it's a great show and I'm glad you're watching it. But like, what do you like? Like, that's what I want to hear.
Is there like, you know, anything that you can think of that's like a definite don't? For writers, like, obviously don't be boring, we've covered, but like just anything else that's maybe popped up in your experience that you want to warn up and coming writers away from, like a behavior or something like that?
There's not so many like don't, I mean, like don't be super late. obviously traffic, don't start a meeting if you're late and say, sorry, I'm late because of traffic, because we all know what traffic is. And when we go back to real life, but don't start a meeting saying I'm late because of traffic.
So be punctual.
But then I think it's also just like, again, like, oh, what do you want to talk about? Huh? Like, what are my favorite shows? It's like, you should know, like you should be able to say like, here are my favorite shows. This is what I'm watching. Like, here's what I'm doing. Here's what I'm watching.
I literally, before every general, I have like a document that I sort of review every time, and like I'll change it every once in a while if I'm working on something new or if I have a new log line I want to pitch or whatever. But I constantly have to update what shows I'm watching because it's just a writer thing. I don't know why. Whenever you're in a meeting and someone asks what you're watching, if you weren't prepared for that question, you're like, what is television? I have never watched a television show in my life. Like, you can't come up with anything off for some reason.
A very common experience to writers to forget every show ever made when asked what we're watching.
It's so, yeah, so weird. Write it yeah. down. So it's like, you have to just be like,
everyone does that. It's like, you're like a deer in headlights and you're like, oh God, I don't even know what television is. It's this really weird thing that happens. And if you were asking me today, like, what are you watching? I hate it because for some reason you always feel like you're on your heels, but just have something like, just have something handy. Like, especially when you can have something off screen, you know, like just have something, have three things down that you're like, I'm watching this because I love that. I'm watching this because I like this. And I'm watching that because I want to write on that kind of show. This is another thing that comes up always, like, it's like notes calls and like notes and then general like note process. What I have to say is, specifically as I'm going into notes and giving notes, my goal is to never just give a note because I want to hear my voice and because I like want to put something in your script. It's really just about like, the best is when I'm like, I have no notes. This is great. Send it to the network. Let them weigh in. Like that's, that's an easy path forward. But when you do have a notes call and when it is notes and there is like, this is truly just a question, just wondering, or here's our handful of suggestions. It's truly like all of it is subjective. So it's really just in the spirit of like, hear out a suggestion. And especially younger writers, there's like this pressure or something like, well, they said we have to do this note, or like we have to address every single note. And it's like, no, you don't. Like, you really don't. Here's food for thought. Maybe something else comes of it. And if for some reason you don't agree on a note, like, never be afraid to like, actually, this is why I think it should be this. And like, always advocate on behalf of your point of view. The notes process is so, it doesn't need to be a scary thing. Like, it should be a conversation. And if you don't agree with something, great. If you do agree with something, great. Take the note.
That's really helpful to hear.
That is really helpful.
And I will just say, as an executive, when you give notes and on the other end of the line, it just goes like silent, that is the most anxiety-inducing spike for me. God, they hate the note. They think I'm so dumb. So there's so much of like, you can hear the note, digest the note, but don't be afraid to be like, cool, I'll take a look, or I disagree and that's why, or, you know, most of the time you can just be like, cool, I'll take a look. And you can look at it and be like, cool, it didn't work.
I love hearing that. I feel like that really humanizes the other end of the phone for writers, because there is this kind of us versus them attitude that can come on you when you've turned in your baby, right? Like, here's my baby. And then it's like, you're criticizing my baby, right? And that the idea that you care about this baby too, you're raising this baby together, and that you would provide advice on it and get that negative reaction is anxiety inducing. I think really, I want every writer to hear that.
And that, by the way, what you said of like, I'm turning in my baby, like, it's like so much of like, you're putting this, your heart on the page. And so when we get something, it's like, the goal is always to be as respectful as possible, because it's not easy to just do that. You know, like, what you guys are doing, like putting pen to paper, and whether it's your story area or your outline or your first draft or your third network draft, like, whatever, you guys are doing this, and we wouldn't have jobs if you guys weren't doing what you're doing. And by the way, when giving notes, I've always find that like, if you read something that you loved about that, like, say that, because it took a lot of effort to make either the scene really funny or like a great character moment or like super emotional, like, resolution to the story. Like, I think it's just as important to give notes that are like, hey, could we look to perhaps address this? But also like, this is a great job. You like crushed this. This is awesome. And I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Any last words of wisdom?
What are not to do's when you meet executives? What rubs you immediately the wrong way?
Oh, you're turning this around on us.
Oh, yeah. I get one question.
I will say, I always think of like kind of the worst dinner I ever had was 20 minutes and the guy made me feel like I was barely in the room. I was like, I don't even know why you wanted to meet with me. You know, like, I don't think he wasn't like, your script sucked or anything. It was like, I read your script. I'm like, cool. What are you guys up to? And he like tells me, he's like, okay, that was great. You know, like, bye, basically. So like, make a writer feel like you actually want to meet with them should be a requirement.
That's great to hear also too. It's like, cause genuinely, like, when someone walks in your door, it's like, I'm so excited to meet you. And like, when you read a sample, you're like, oh, like, it's just great to be able to meet the person that wrote this. You're feeding off that energy, right? You're like, cool, like, this is going really well. This is not going well at all. Like, get me out of here.
Yeah, I think for me, it's similar, where you're like, why are we here? Like, you're obviously busy. I think anytime an exec is clearly distracted, which I understand, you have to look at Zoom. You can't just like put your phone away. You're getting texts or emails are popping up, but it's very disconcerting as a writer when you're meeting with an exec and someone is clearly like checking their email constantly or like not even looking at you on the screen. It's just a little nerve wracking.
Bad executive. Bad.
Bad. They get the spray bottle.
Spray back in the office.
But I've had many, many meetings with Julia and other writers. We actually share a mentee in the Warner Brothers Writers Workshop right now. Shout out Oriana. She's our little baby
Shout
writer.
Shout out Oriana. By the way, we did not plan that. It just happened.
Yeah, it just happened. Aww. It was so magical. But
lucky Oriana.
Julia is very engaged and engaging in meetings. So a dream as a writer to meet with her.
Julia, seriously, thank you so much. I feel like our listeners are going to get so much out of this.
Thank you for having me on this excellent podcast. I have no notes on the name of the podcast. I love that. And I have no notes on this general, what you guys are doing. It's really awesome. And from what I've listened to, you guys are asking all the right questions. And I love that you're trying to shed light on things that people aren't talking about. And the whole point of it is like, what I wish I knew. Like, I wish just someone told me this like very basic thing. And it's like, oh, that makes so much sense. So I love that you guys are doing this and sort of giving back in a way and just helping anyone who wants to get in, just make it seem possible. Everything's impossible until you do it and then it's possible. So
yes.
I think you guys are helping just anyone who listens to this. I think it's awesome.
And thank you to Joey Morales for introducing us all those many years ago.
Thank you, Joseph.
All right. So that was a great interview with Julia Turner, who works at Warner Brothers TV. And that's it for today. I don't know what else to say.
That's a wrap. Please. That's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
It's been great to be here.
Jess, oh, thank you, Jess.
Jess is back.
So please follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @UntitledFemale, and you can connect with us there or email us at UntitledFemaleDrivenPodcast@gmail.com. And if you really want to just make our day, make our weeks, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. We'd really appreciate it. And yeah, send us an email or tweet us and let us know what you'd like to hear us talk about next. That's all for now. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.